What's going on, guys? Welcome back to the show. Today we are talking about adding running to your lifting routine, and specifically we're going to talk through five tips for adding running to your lifting routine, and then I'm going to give you some places to start. So I have two kind of notes in my head, and the first one is five tips for adding running to your lifting routine, and the second is a list of basically how I would start if you're somebody who's looking to do so. I just want to say before we start, people who have been leaving reviews on Spotify and iTunes, I see you, and that is so freaking helpful. I'm going to be putting more work into the podcast this year, doing more solo episodes. I've had a lot of people say that they really enjoy them, and so I really do appreciate that. And so if you enjoy the podcast, if you get value from it, it takes only a second to go to Spotify, leave a five-star review, or on iTunes podcast app, super duper helpful. So let's talk about five tips for adding running into your lifting routine. Number one, don't add too much too fast. Going from 0 to 3 runs per week out of nowhere is a great way to get injured. Running is a higher impact activity that you should ease into. And I don't want to fearmonger or gatekeep around running. Like if you start running, you're going to hurt yourself. But yeah, the number one tip I would say is don't do too much too fast, especially because you are also already lifting, right? This is in the context of somebody who's already lifting weights and is, you know, a couple times a week, 2 to 5 times a week lifting weights and wants to add some running because they hear about all the amazing kind of heart health longevity benefits to doing cardiovascular exercise. And that's something they want to add to their routine. And so what I would recommend is just don't do too much too fast. Please, you're not in a rush, right? You're not in a rush. You're trying to do this for overall health. Do it gradually. And specifically, we're going to talk about running because running is just, of all the modalities of cardiovascular work, I think the one that a lot of people are drawn to. For reasons that we can talk about a bit later, it's something I've been pondering why we have such a, maybe it's something biological about moving our bodies on the earth, or, you know, it's what we were evolutionarily designed to do and all that stuff. And you just get to go out and be one with nature or whatever. So I'm going to talk about this in the context of running, but a lot of these are going to go for, cardiovascular exercise in general, but there are some running specific things that we're going to talk about. So number one is don't add too much too fast. You know, going from 0 to 3 runs, it's just not the... Don't just be like, I'm going to start running and then just go out for 3 kind of ambiguous runs where you're just like, I go out for runs now. It's like, I'm pumped when people want to do that, but I just want you to exercise some caution and do it a little bit more intelligently, a little bit more gradually, and we'll talk about that in a bit. Remember, you're just not in a rush. Like, and something I think about is like a lot of the people that want to do this, they feel fit, right? They're like people that are, oh, I feel fit, you know, because I lift, you know, weights several times a week and I feel good, you know, and I go for walks. It's like, yeah, that's awesome, by the way. By the way, that's amazing. But this is just kind of a different beast. And I'm speaking from experience. I am somebody who I played, you know, sports at a reasonable level. So, doing running for sports is something I'm familiar with. But in my adult life, doing like obligate cardiovascular training, like running, is not something I've done. For the better part of 10 years after I, you know, quit playing sports, I did not do any intentional running. I just lifted and walked, and that's great. And as fit as I felt, you know what I mean? I felt like I was in good shape. I was in good health. Running was just a different beast. And I started my running journey like a year ago, and I really ramped things up gradually. And I feel, you know, I don't want to be like, well, I didn't get injured, and thus, you know, I know exactly how to do this. But I'm very happy I didn't get injured. I'm not saying that I won't ever have little niggles and pains and aches and stuff that will happen just in my pursuit of continuing to improve at stuff and do it more and all of that. But yeah, don't add too much too fast is by far my number one tip. And again, if stick around for the end of the episode, I'm going to talk about specifically how I would start if you're someone who lifts, what I would do, what are some of the workouts that I would have, you know, in your rotation, and how I would go about thinking about those. I'm trying to get this episode in 45 minutes. Let's see how it goes, but I'm already pessimistic about that. Tip number two is utilize a low impact modality for cross training. What I mean by that, low impact modality, running is a pretty high impact exercise. Just when you factor in how many steps you're taking, the eccentric component, the kind of ground and pound, the impact. When you compare running to something like swimming or biking or elliptical or the rower or even the Stairmaster, those have a much lower, they are much lower impact exercises, much lower impact modalities, less of an eccentric component, probably more friendly to the joints for the most part. And so if you are, P.S., this goes for everyone who runs, who is a little bit more intermediate, more advanced, but if you are getting into running, especially in addition to your resistance training, I would recommend really acquiring or utilizing some form of low impact modality. And we'll talk a little bit more about that as we go through the podcast. What I mean is when you just start running, it's a high impact exercise. If you just go out for 3 runs, like we talked about, if you're just like, hey, I go from 0 to 3 runs per week, like you will most likely come up against some sort of an overuse injury, a lower limb pain, some maybe your hips, maybe your knee, maybe your ankle, maybe your shins, just from going from, you know, not doing this thing to doing a lot of this thing that, again, if you do a lot of it and it's kind of high impact, then okay, yeah, maybe you're just not ready for that. So what I recommend is that have one of these, a bike, a rower, elliptical, have that in your arsenal so that you can, because those things are going to help you work on general cardiovascular fitness, and those general adaptations will carry over to your running, and they will allow you to kind of work harder when you are newer to running. So when I first started this whole like running journey, I was only running once a week. I was running once a week. I was doing 3 workouts per week, but 2 of them were on the bike, my Air Assault bike, whatever. It doesn't need to be that. It can be a rower, it can be Stairmaster, elliptical, it can be swimming, whatever. But I was able to start working pretty hard and building some of those underlying physiological adaptations, those foundational cardiovascular adaptations that would translate, not as well as running, of course, but would translate to my running training, but wouldn't, you know, take that impact level to something that I wasn't ready for. It was a way for me to start working on those gradual foundational cardiovascular adaptations without actually having to do running at the time, which if I just started doing a lot of it, probably would have led to some lower limb injuries, right? So I want to be clear. It took me about a year to get up to 3 runs per week. I'm at 3 runs per week right now. And every now and again, I get a little bit of like, you know, maybe a little shin splint. And so, you know, every now and again, we'll take 1 run out and we'll bring the bike back in. And if I were training more times per week than I'm training right now, I'm only training 3 times a week. I would be adding in at least 1 cross-training exercise. Cross-training just meaning like non-running workout. So yeah, it took me about a year to get up to 3 runs per week. I'm not saying my way or the highway or is the best way, whatever. But I think people ramp up too quickly the volume and they do it only with running, which is a high impact exercise. So if you're doing both of those, again, I just think of the, you don't have to do that. You don't have to put yourself at that higher percent chance of getting injured. Utilize a low impact modality. For all of my one-on-one clients who have come to me for race training, for cardio, for running coaching lately, you know, it's something that's basically mandatory, is that we have an alternative modality so that we can get some of those cardiovascular adaptations, physiological adaptations without the ground and pound. And God, when I say ground and pound, that's an all-encompassing term for the eccentric and the loading and the impact. I don't mean to fearmonger. It's not like if you go for a run, you're going to break in half. That's not the case, but we can decrease the chance of injury while getting those underlying adaptations if we have another impact or lower impact modality to use. Number 3 is motherfucking eat. It's called eat. You got to eat. Cardio is not about fat loss. I mean, I know that that's, you know, movement is obviously a contributing factor to maintaining body composition, to changing body composition. But don't get into this cardio game because you think it's going to lead to fat loss. We see in time and time again in the research that cardio alone by itself without any kind of nutritional intervention just doesn't make a big impact on body weight. People tend to get hungrier when they start doing cardio. They tend to kind of overeat the calories. They overestimate the calories they burn and then they end up overeating those calories. This is not about fat loss. Don't be listening to this podcast as if it's a way for you to lose fat. Do cardiovascular exercise because it's good for your heart. It's good for your longevity. It fights disease, all that good stuff. It's good for you, right? And when you think about it that way, you got to eat to support this new activity. Listen, you're doing a lot of training now. If you're somebody listening to this podcast and you want to add running to your lifting, you are now a hybrid athlete or whatever, you know, whatever the terminology is. But you're doing a lot of training now. You're not going to feel that great unless you're fueling appropriately. It's not the end of the world if you do this while you're in a deficit, but whenever you're like, God, whenever you're learning a new skill, I wouldn't do that and also be in a calorie deficit. Like, I would want you to have a block of time where you're learning good running practices while fueling yourself optimally. There are, of course, it's possible to do that while in a calorie deficit, but it is impossible to kind of do that optimally. And I wouldn't want to see somebody introducing themselves to more of a hybrid training approach, do that without enough fuel. Again, you won't break in half if you're in a small deficit and you're also doing running and lifting. Of course not. But I wouldn't recommend that to people that are getting into it for the first time. I would want you to do that in a physiological state where you have enough energy to perform well, right? And people will ask, well, oh, I'm running 2 days a week or I'm doing 2 days of cardio. Like, how many extra calories do I have? It's tough to say. It's difficult to say. I can't say, oh, you're doing 2 days of zone 2 now. Like, you need an extra 87 calories a day. I don't know that. What I mean is there's no way for anybody to know that. Of course, you're going to increase calories in proportion to how much cardio you've added. And so when we talk about how I would start, you know, we're probably going to talk about something like 2 days a week. You might add, you know, 100 calories a day across the week, right? You might do that. You might not add anything at all and just see how you feel, because in the beginning, the training isn't that big of a stressor. You might not be burning that many extra calories at all. So you might just keep things the same. But I just want to stress this idea of you're doing a lot of training now. Like, make sure you're fueling. Like, if someone's like, I'm not recovering well from my lifting, it's like, yeah, well, what's your nutrition look like? I'm not recovering from my hybrid training program. It's like, yeah, are you eating enough? You know, are you eating enough to really feel and perform your best? And so that's something I do recommend. If you're looking to add running into your training, really, I would not do that while being in like a big deficit where you're going to feel like crap all the time. Like, you're increasing the stress on your body. Let's make sure that we're fueling appropriately enough to feel good so you can learn this new skill. Number four is my most important programming tip, and it's don't show up to workouts you care about really sore. I got to tell you, people over, I'm not saying there isn't a lot of nuance to hybrid programming at a high level. There is, absolutely. And even at like a medium to introductory level, there is some nuance for sure. I'm not trying to poo-poo it. I don't want to be the nothing matters guy, but people are often like, well, where should I put my run? It's like, think about it this way. Don't show up to a workout that you care about with those muscles really sore. So if you have a run that you really want to perform well at, maybe don't do your hardest leg day right before, right? Or if you have your hardest leg day, maybe don't do your hardest run that you know is going to leave you really beaten up the day before. I did a review in my group program, in my community app. We looked at this. We did like some mock programming as part of the free resources. There's a free resource on basically how to do this with programming. We did like a big spreadsheet and it was super fun. But if you tell me you're lifting 4 days a week and you're doing a zone two session, you can put that thing anywhere. You can put it anywhere. If you're doing like a hard interval session, a sub-threshold intervals, tempo stuff, whatever like fancy terminology, like interval training that you're doing, like maybe just put that in a place where you're not doing a really hard leg day the next day, right? It's like, it's not that complicated to get to a point that's logical, that a weekly organization of this that's logical. If you look at your week, and for most people, I'm usually speaking to people who care more about their lifting and really want to perform well, but they want to do some cardio because they enjoy it, because it's good for their health. And so I don't want to pigeonhole anybody or everybody into this, but usually I'm talking to somebody who cares mostly about their lifting performance, and the running is more a thing they enjoy and they're doing for health. So for that person, just don't schedule a really hard run the day before your leg day or the morning before your leg day, and you're going to be good to go. It's literally the one thing I need you to think about. And by the way, even if you did this, even if you scheduled a hard run and the next day was legs, or you did legs and the next day was a hard run, like over the course of many years, like you'd still do fine, you know, like, and on some level, if you're going to do this whole hybrid training thing, like you kind of got to give up the idea that you're going to feel super duper fresh, like ever. At my peak, I was training like 8 times a week between lifting and cardio. And I'm not saying that we aren't managing fatigue in a way that's logical. We are, but You kind of in like a tongue in cheek, kind of laughing sort of way, you kind of give up the idea that you're ever going to be fresh ever again because you're just doing so much work. So this idea that you're going to like optimize it and you're going to show up to every workout feeling 100%, it's like probably not the case. You're probably going to be carrying some fatigue at any given time. So cool. Tip number five on how to add running to your lifting routine is stop listening to people who tell you it'll wreck your gains. Stop listening to people who will tell you it'll wreck your gains. Now, I want to be very clear. If you're a pro bodybuilder, do not add lots of running. Running, cardio, lots of running, lots of cardio work will interfere, listen closely, will interfere with your ability to make maximum gains, right? If you want to be the absolute best in the world at something, you don't do multiple things, right? I mean, if you want to be the absolute best basketball player that you want to be, at some point, you don't also pursue a career in tennis, right? Like at some point, there's this chasing two rabbits situation, but it's not chase two rabbits, catch none. That's not how this works, right? It's like chase two rabbits and catch, you know, like 90% of each of them, right? And so the truth is most people hear that, they're like, running will inhibit your gains. That is true to some degree, but not inhibit your ability to make any gains, maybe just inhibit your ability to get as jacked as you would have gotten if you didn't also do a lot of running. And that's okay. Like, you're not a pro bodybuilder. I mean, I don't mean to assume what you are, what you care about, listener, but like, I'm assuming most people want to be like fit, strong, healthy, muscular, like, and not suck wind going upstairs. And you can absolutely do that. You can be jacked, muscular, and in good cardiovascular shape. You can't be your most muscular and your most endurant, right? That is it's an oxymoron, the idea that you could be your 100% best at multiple things in this regard. But nobody is, like, it's already a non-starter, this idea of like, oh, well, if I can't get the absolute, you're not after that. Most people are not after that. You're after getting more muscular, looking like you lift, you know, being in reasonable cardiovascular shape, maybe running a race, maybe being in pretty good cardiovascular shape, maybe being in really good cardiovascular shape and being really jacked. And I'll tell you, that's possible. And so I just, the interference effect is technically real at the really, really, really mega high levels, but that just probably doesn't pertain to you. Like, you can probably do 4 days of lifting, 3 days of cardio, which, by the way, is a lot of training, and get really good at both of them. Optimally good at either of them? No. Really good at both of them? Absolutely. If your training is good, your recovery is good, you're eating enough calories, you know, you're sleeping enough, you get enough protein, like, your training is, you know, just designed in a way that's logical and evidence-based, all that stuff. Like, you can do both, right? You can. And so I get that kind of grinds my gears a little bit. This idea of, like, first of all, this idea that running will wreck your gains. What matters is a work to rest ratio that you can manage week to week. Like, running will wreck your gains. If you run so much that you are not recovered when you show up to your lifts, you're really tired all the time, you're really fatigued, and you're not progressing, then it will absolutely interfere with your ability to make gains. But that's not necessarily something specific about the running, per se. It's about you doing, on average over time, more work than you can recover from, and you're not recovering from it, thus you're not able to perform in those workouts and create an overload and induce an adaptation. And so, yeah, it's, in some ways, it's not complicated because you can do both until overall you're doing too much, and then both things will suffer. And so I think when we're talking about reasonable amounts of most of both, reasonable amount of both of cardio and lifting, and a reasonable level of recovery, like, you know, you're not spending 50% of your calories on alcohol and never sleeping and, you know, just all over the place, life stress through the roof. Like, if we're talking about a reasonable individual with their calories reasonably in check, you know, doing, you know, something like 6 total sessions a week, with not everything is balls to the wall. It's not 6 Orange Theory or 6 CrossFit. It's, you know, 3 lifting, maybe 2 low intensity cardio, 1 interval training, like something logical. Like, people are going to be fine. You're going to be able to adapt to both. You will get better cardiovascularly. You'll still be able to build muscle. So stop listening to people who would tell you it'll wreck your gains. And of course, this is a podcast, so we get to add some nuance, but nobody's going to say what I just said on the internet, you know, like on Instagram. It's going to be more polarizing, more absolute, more dichotomous, more, you know, you can't do this, you can't do that. It's like, you know, if you organize it logically, you can get pretty darn good at both of these things. You can. You absolutely can. Cool. So those are my 5 tips. Don't add too much too fast. Utilize a low impact modality. Eat. Make sure you're fueling. Don't show up to workouts you care about really sore, and stop listening to people who will tell you, you know, doing any cardio will wreck your gains. Now, how would I start? I'm imagining I'm talking to somebody who has been a lifting enthusiast, cares about building muscle, but is hearing me and all these, you know, I will admit hybrid training, this idea of doing cardio and lifting is becoming in vogue. It's the new thing, right? And I don't know why that makes it sound negative. It's awesome. Like, it's a great thing to do both. It's great for your health. So I don't know why people are all like up in arms of like, it's just a new fad. It's not a fad. It's just like, and by the way, it's probably the best fad ever, right? I mean, is it not like the thing you would do if you wanted to live a really good, healthy life? Yeah, you'd lift some weights, be really strong, and also, you know, not suck wind going up the stairs. So yeah, fad or not, I'm talking to a person who cares about lifting, who has been lifting, who hears everybody talking about running and all this, and is intrigued by the health benefits, maybe by a past history of enjoying running, wants to get back into it or get into it for the first time. So I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 points here. And the first is, so how would I start? I would start by establishing a couple of workouts. I'm going to go through 3 workouts that I think are important to have in your arsenal. I'm not saying you need to do all 3 of these every week. You could do something like what I'm about to say, one of these each week. You could, or one of these per week. But these are the 3 workouts that I would learn how to do and start to incorporate into your routine, maybe 2 of them a week, maybe 1 of them a week in the beginning, up to 3 of them a week. The first one, and I'll explain them afterwards, the first one is a zone 2 cross training. The second is a run walk interval. And the third is called a fartlek. I know, let's laugh, the word fartlek. Yes, totally. I think it's a Swedish term. It means speed play. And that is a really good definition for it because that is kind of what we mean by it. But I would establish these 3 workouts, zone 2 cross training workout, a run walk interval workout, and a fartlek, which we'll talk about. I'll break down all 3 of these right now. So the first one, a zone 2 cross training workout. Cross training just means not running, right? Cross training really just means not doing your race modality. So if you're a swimmer, cross training could be biking. If you're biking, cross training could be swimming, could be running. It just kind of means not your race modality. In our context, what we mean is not running. And we are usually looking for this cross training modality to be something low impact, like we talked about. So for a lot of runners, cross training could be biking, could be swimming, could be elliptical, could be rowing. I have had an Aerodyne or an Echo bike for a while now. It's been my source of cross training. I've really enjoyed it. This zone 2 cross training is like a bread and butter general fitness workout, just like really, really important to have in your arsenal. If you're one of my one-on-one clients, you know that we establish this zone 2 cross training early on because it is something that we can do with low impact. We can start to build some of those cardiovascular adaptations. It's not going to be very fatiguing, which we'll talk about in a second. And it's something we can always have in our back pocket. And so, you know, I'll give a brief description of zone 2. Zone 2 is a reference to a level of intensity, how hard you're working. Usually we're talking about this in the context of a 5-zone system. Zone 1 would be just going out for a walk in the park. Zone 5 would be an all-out sprint. And there's just a gradual increase in intensity from zone 1 to zone 5. Zone 2 is something like 70%-ish of max heart rate. You're going to see so many different definitions of this. I like to take about 70% max heart rate, and then I like to plus or minus 5 beats per minute to make a range. So to find out your max heart rate, something like 220 minus your age. I know my max heart rate. Max heart rate is like 197 just from training. And so if I take that and I take 70% of that, it's like 138 plus or minus, you know, we're at 133 to 143. I usually say anything in the 130s is good enough for me. No, I don't want this to be an entire zone 2 podcast. Zone 2 is not a heart rate. Heart rate is a decent proxy for the level of intensity that zone 2 is, but it's not technically a heart rate. I'd rather people get really in touch with what zone 2 feels like. Zone 2 is a pace that feels almost infinitely sustainable. It's an RPE like 3 or 4. It's just harder than a walk in the park. It's certainly something where you get your heart rate up, but it's certainly not something where you're at any point feeling like, oh my God, I wish this was over. I'm getting really tired. It's a pace that you should be able to keep a conversation with somebody in full sentences, right? You should be able to, if you call me on the phone while I'm in zone 2, I will pick up. That's how I think about it. I could pick up. You would know that I'm exercising by listening to me talk and listening to me breathe, but I could keep a conversation with you. Once you get into zone 3, zone 4, obviously zone 5, like your sentences are going to be super fragmented. You're going to be kind of taking that deep breath every couple of words. That's not zone 2. And so when you start to feel like you're trending into that kind of breathing pattern where you can't maintain it, you can't speak in full sentences anymore, you're taking that gasp breath every couple of words, that you are outside of zone 2 now. The main benefit of zone 2, and then I'm going to move on because I have another podcast with Alyssa Olenek about zone 2, and my friend Brian and I have talked about it. The main benefit of zone 2, you're going to hear so much about zone 2 and all the benefits of mitochondrial biogenesis and all of this stuff that's good about zone 2. The best thing about zone 2, listen to me crisply and clearly, is it has a really good stimulus to fatigue ratio. What I mean is you can do a lot of it. You can benefit from so much of it, and it's not very tiring. You can do a lot benefit from a lot, and it's not tiring. A visual might be, it has a very low floor for adaptations, meaning you can get pretty easy adaptations in zone two. You don't have to do a ton. And the ceiling is mega high, meaning you can do so much zone two. If you look at like elite marathon runners, elite runners across the board, 80% of the work or more that they're doing is in zone two or lower. And so they're doing a ton of this low intensity work because you can get a lot of adaptations without getting really tired. So that's the first workout you should have, which is a zone two cross training workout. Again, zone two being a relatively low intensity where you can keep a conversation in full sentences. Something like, you know, maybe 70% max heart rate plus or minus 5 beats per minute is a decent range. And then you do what's called a talk test, which is, you know, imagine, you know, trying to keep a conversation with somebody is a really, really good marker of being in zone two. The next is a run walk interval. And remember, I'm speaking primarily to somebody who's not currently running, who wants to get into it. I would look at your zone two training, your cross training, as a way to build fitness. I would look at this run walk interval as a way to build skill, the skill of running, to practice the technique, to get a lot of good reps. If you're trying to learn a skill, don't do it under a lot of fatigue. Listen to me clearly. If you're trying to learn a skill, and make no mistake, running is a skill. Running is a skill. Running is a skill that we think isn't a skill. It's like cooking the perfect scrambled egg. If you ask me, can I cook scrambled eggs? Absolutely. If you ask a Michelin star chef, can I cook scrambled eggs? He's going to say, absolutely not. You don't have the skills for that. Like, you're not cooking it correctly. And I feel like in some way that's how we think about running, where like everyone's like, oh, running, you just, I know how to do that. I did that in gym class, or I did that back. Yes, you can move your body more quickly. Absolutely. But the skill of running, the actual, you know, creating those good motor patterns, doing it in a way that's going to start to establish good technique, you don't want to do that under a lot of fatigue. So like, yeah, it's something we all think we know how to do, but it's probably a skill that we should be learning. And you're going to learn that skill best if you're not doing it under a lot of fatigue. So your zone two cross training workout is great for these zone two adaptations, these low impact, low intensity adaptations. And then I would want somebody to generate this or do or have a run walk interval with full rest. So somewhere between, you know, 1 minute jog to up to 6 minute jog. So 1 minute run all the way up to 6 minutes of running. By the way, these are all ballparks. Don't let's not get hung up on it. It could be 6, could be 8 minutes. I'm imagining somebody's not that fit who hasn't run in a long time. So physiologically speaking, you know, every interval duration, intensity level relationship is all beneficial. If I'm taking on somebody new, I want to do a workout in their program with 1 minute run, full rest. So 1 minute run, maybe 2 minute walk, maybe 2 minute run, 2 minute walk, work up to 3 minute run, 2 minute walk, and work that up without getting fatigued, without getting fatigued. And this workout takes something like 20 to 30 total minutes. The point is, my coach would say, no sloppy reps, no sloppy runs. You are doing this to expose your body to running without doing it under a lot of fatigue. This is a skill building exercise. You're getting, just teaching your body how to do this under not a lot of fatigue. So this isn't like run until I get absolutely burnt the F out and then walk and then do another all out interval and then walk. That's not what we're doing. No, I want you to run for a minute super confidently with good technique. I want you to feel good, feel strong, work up a little bit, get your heart rate up a little bit, start to feel some of that RPE climb up, but don't get to a point where you feel like you're flip-flopping through it. You're just flopping your arms around. Technique has gone to shit and you're not doing it in a way that actually really resembles good technique. Not getting exhausted, building good motor patterns, no sloppy reps, no sloppy runs. The point is getting some running under your belt, not under a lot of fatigue. And so again, something like a 20 to 30 minute workout with anywhere from 1 minute run all the way up to, you know, 5 minute run with a full rest in between, where it's, you know, roughly a 2 minute walk usually does the trick. And so I really like this as a way of saying, hey, like, I know you want to run. Let's start introducing you to that movement, but let's not do it in a way that's absolutely killing you. We can use our cross training modality for that. You might, you know, if I had to write a fourth workout here, I would put an interval session, a harder interval session with your cross training modality, so you can start to have something where you are working really hard, but without the stress of the higher impact stuff like running. The third exercise, or third workout I would have or learn how to do is called a fartlek. And so a fartlek is it's a Swedish word for speed play. And I think that that really does describe the word play there is kind of a nod to the fact that a fartlek is pretty auto-regulated, which means it's kind of self-driven. It's kind of like a self-driven go-by-feel interval session. Now, I'll tell you right now, there are a lot of slightly different definitions of fartlek. Some of them are super official. This is the exact way you should be doing a fartlek. I think it's more beneficial to understand the fartlek as a general principle of what it is. A fartlek is essentially, without, you know, with risking being, you know, reductionist or just oversimplifying, run faster until you get tired, then slow down till you feel recovered. Then go back to running faster till you feel tired, then slow down till you feel recovered. And you will do that for a certain amount of time or a certain distance. And so I love this approach because you get to auto-regulate it based on how you feel, and it gets harder as you get fitter, right? You can start to run faster and for longer as you get more fit. And so it's kind of a workout that is something that gets harder kind of on its own as you get better. It's not so strict of like, you got to run for 1 minute, then walk for 2 minutes. It's, I want you to run at a pace that's faster than, you know, your easy pace. And I want you to do that until you get tired. And what you can do with a client is you can give them an RPE or a specific heart rate if they're doing heart rate monitoring. So I might say something like, all right, Susan, I want you to go out and I want you to start at a really easy pace. Then I want you to do faster than that until your heart rate gets to, you know, 170. And if it hits 170, I want you to slow down until it gets back down to 140. When you get back down to 140, I want you to go back to that faster pace until it gets back to 170. And then I want you to walk again until you recover to 140. Something like that, right? Now, you don't need to be so specific with the heart rate. It can be kind of nice because sometimes having specific structure just is nice. But I quite like the unstructured nature of a fartlek where you're just saying, I'm going to go out and I'm going to run fast. Not sprinting, not even near sprinting, but you're going to run a bit faster until you get tired, and then you're going to slow down until you're recovered, and then you're going to run faster until you're tired, and then you're going to run slower until you're recovered. And again, I would echo some of the previous points of no sloppy reps, no sloppy rests, no sloppy runs. This is about accumulating maybe more and faster minutes spent running over the course of a given distance or time. And I'm kind of obsessed with the auto-regulated nature of this. I really love the idea of saying, hey, on Saturdays, I might go out for a 60-minute fartlek or something like where I know I'm going to go out and I'm going to just start running without a lot of structure in mind. And if I get tired, if I feel like my heart rate hits a certain amount, if I feel like RPE drifts up to a certain amount, I'm going to slow down until I feel recovered. And then I'm going to go back to running. And when I feel tired again, I feel like my form might start to break down. Maybe my heart rate's up. I'm going to go back to walking. And when I feel recovered, go back to running. And you guys get the point. And so I really, really like the auto-regulated nature of this. It allows you to kind of push yourself as you feel better, maybe go easier if you feel worse. And that's a really nice thing to have in your arsenal. I would start with probably two of these per week, one of which would be that Z2 cross training. That zone 2 is great for general, just like low impact fitness. And I would think of that run walk as a skill building and technique exercise. That fartlek is super scalable. You can do this right from the get-go, really. You can make the fartlek your interval session. Instead of putting a specific time on it, you can just go out and say, hey, I'm going to jog until I get tired, and then I'm going to walk until I feel recovered. I don't love doing that in the beginning just because I think people, they go too hard. I'd say 90% of the time, people are like, don't stop as early as I'd like them to stop. They're like, get to the point where they feel like they're dying, and then they stop. That's not necessarily what I want in the beginning. And I got to say, as I was making notes for this, I'm thinking of my coach, Alex Viotta. I'm thinking of really smart people in the space, Alec Blennis, Dr. Alyssa Olenek, what they might say. There are so many different opinions and different types of workouts. And as you get more into this, I think the nuance of programming for cardio is super fun. I'm having so much fun coaching clients through their introduction to running, coaching clients to races. There are so many different types of workouts to keep this fun. Sub-threshold runs. You're going to hear things like sub-threshold runs and tempo runs and long, slow runs and VO2 max intervals. And they're all great. And I don't want to make the three that I set up here, put them up on a pedestal. That's not true. I think, honestly, if your goal is general health, you're probably going to be exposing yourself to a wide range of these workouts over time. It's not just do zone 2 or just do a fart. Like it's, you know, sometimes you're going to run faster for shorter. Sometimes you're going to run longer, but slower, and everywhere in between. And so I hope this podcast gives you a jumping off point. If you're somebody who wants to get into running, get your Zone 2 cross training workout, get your incline, you know, even if it's I would even accept an incline walk. Like if you're somebody at home and you don't own a bike or a rower or something, you don't need to go out and buy something like that. I do recommend it though. But even an incline walk, like establish a Zone 2 workout that you know exactly how to do, you have full confidence with. Then start to expose yourself to that actual skill of running, but don't do it getting absolutely wrecking yourself. Don't need to be wrecking yourself in the beginning. And then over time, I really do like a fartlek. It's kind of like, you know, a chance to break free from the structure and let yourself push yourself as hard as you feel like, which may fluctuate day to day, week to week. And so those are three runs or three cardio workouts I really love. I hold my tongue on some of the other stuff because I really do really enjoy the programming aspect of, you know, air quote hybrid training. You know, there's so many fun ways to get a good stimulus, to get a good quality stimulus. So many different ways to organize different paces, different, you know, interval structures, all that stuff. And they're all great. And we could talk about VO2 max intervals. We could talk about the long, slow run, but this is about introducing running to your lifting regimen. And as if somebody who I guess primarily cares about lifting, but wants to get into running, doesn't want to break down, doesn't want it to negatively impact their training. And so, yeah, so hopefully there was something fun in here for you to learn. If you ever have a question, reach out. I am doing some, I don't want to get caught up in nomenclature and stuff, but I'm doing some hybrid coaching for people who want to, you know, train for their first marathon, train for a fast 5K, but still want to lift and don't want to shrivel up into a raisin and all that stuff. And so that's been really fun. And I'll probably do maybe a more advanced programming, maybe a more advanced program design discussion in a podcast in the future for some big nerds. But for now, yeah, let's go. I'll do a quick recap and then I'll stop waffling. We'll get off. So tip number one, don't add too much too fast. Tip number two, utilize a low impact modality. Tip number three, make sure you're fueling. Tip number four, don't show up to workouts you care about really sore. Tip number five, stop listening to people who tell you it'll wreck your gains. And I would start with a Zone 2 cross training workout, a run walk interval that is not super challenging where you can develop the skill of running. And I would start to learn more of an unstructured fartlek where you can get out and kind of auto-regulate based on how you feel. All right, talk to you guys in the next one.
Thanks for tuning in to this episode of Where Optimal Meets Practical. If you liked the episode, it would mean the world to me if you posted a screenshot to your social media or left a 5-star review on iTunes. That stuff really helps. If you ever want to get in touch with me, just shoot me a DM on Instagram @JordanLipsFitness. I'm always around to chat. Thanks, guys. Have a good one.